Welcome to Relationship Essentials for Men. And women are invited too. I mean, I added that to the title of this program with Dr. Robert Glover. And Dr. Robert Glover is author of the book No More Mr. Nice Guy. And he has a couple of bonuses for us, including What Do Women Want? And No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's a free audio program. So click on your bonuses. I'd highly recommend to you listening to Robert talking about No More Mr. Nice Guy. He really has a wonderful take on, you know, how we can get what we really want in our relationships and in life. In today's program, Robert would like to speak specifically to men, because historically, you know, women have been thought of as the primary gatekeepers, you know, of intimate relationships. And it has some downsides. You know, women often come to feel controlling and criticizing and overworked in the relationship and at home. Men often come to feel controlled and criticized and unappreciated in the home and relationship. Men tend to become defensive and avoidant and see their partner as a problem to be solved. Of course, that's where men come from, problem solvers. And women tend to feel dismissed and lonely and have to guess what their partner is feeling and thinking. Both partners end up feeling frustrated and resentful and powerless and misunderstood. You know, have you ever felt like that? You know anybody that feels like that? This is universal. And no wonder that the divorce rate is 50%. So in this program, men will learn, and women, this is good for you to know too, how to become conscious and present in their intimate relationship, how to become a good ascertainer, how to become honest and transparent with your partner, how to set the tone and take the lead with love and integrity. And women, what you're going to learn, what it looks like when your partner becomes present in your relationship, how to trust and let go of control, how to more fully participate in a more reciprocal relationship that you really want, how to welcome increased sexual passion. So, Robert, thank you very, very much for being here. I'm excited about our program today.
David, thank you for the invitation. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, the No More Mr. Nice Guy paradigm and your insights and the way you deliver it, I've just found it to be one of the most effective relationship seminars I've ever participated in. So where do you want to start today?
Well, where a good place to start is that this paradigm that I'm proposing in some way seems radical, but on the other way it seems fairly natural and logical. It seems radical because, as you read and as you mentioned, that historically we've tended to think of women as the gatekeeper of relationship. It seems like the female brain is oriented towards connection, towards relationship, towards communication. And so often in the relationship, because it's the woman, it's the mom, perhaps raising the kids, who's looking after a household responsibility, who's looking for connection and intimacy and communication with her husband, it seems like that historically we think, okay, it's the women that are going to drive this. It's the women that are going to set the tone. It's women that are going to bring up issues that need to be talked about or resolved. But unfortunately what happens is that as women do this, men often see whatever's going on with their partner as, okay, that's a problem to be solved. If I can just solve the problem, then she'll quit bugging me. Then she'll quit wanting to talk about it. Then she'll quit having these emotions about it. And so the men tend to approach situations as like either they get their defenses up, they try to fix it right away, or in time they often just start tuning out their partner. And that leads to some of the things you mentioned about it, the women feeling lonely and dismissed and like the burden's all on them, and the man's feeling attacked and underappreciated and defensive and avoidant. And it's just not a very pretty scene. And I've been working with couples for close to 30 years, and this is a fairly consistent pattern I've seen couples struggling with in their relationships.
Yep, me too. And it seems universal. So what do you think is really going on there?
If I had to define a core of the problem, I'm a marriage and family therapist by training. I'm a systems therapist. I've been trained to look at the big picture and how every part of a system is playing a role in that system and perhaps even needs that system to be the way that it is. Now, as you know, I wrote a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's been out for about 6 years, and that book is about my own process of awareness of how me being a pleaser and a peacekeeper and a conflict avoider and seeking approval, how that wasn't working well in my intimate relationships. And at the same time, as I was looking at those patterns in myself, I noticed that a lot of the men I was working with in their intimate relationships were saying the same things I was. I'm a nice guy. I'm the nicest guy you'll ever meet. How come she doesn't appreciate me? How come she's always angry at me? How come I'm always giving? When's it going to be my turn? How come she doesn't want to have sex with me? And I was frustrated, and a lot of these men I was talking to were frustrated. And what I've really come to see as my work and my career has evolved more and more towards working with men is that I see as long as men are kind of on the sidelines or the backup quarterback in a relationship, or they're just kind of putting out the fires with their wife or their girlfriend, it robs the relationship of reciprocity, of intimacy, of closeness, of fun, of joy. So I've really seen my mission as helping men become more conscious, more aware, more present in their relationship, and stop seeing their partner as a problem to be solved and seeing them more as a person whom they want to be closely connected with.
Yeah, and sometimes men try to cope by, you know, dominating and controlling, and that doesn't work, and they try to cope, like you said, by pleasing and being a nice guy, and that doesn't work. So what's the alternative here? What does work?
Well, I think historically we've had two models of masculinity, and you've alluded to both of these here. And both of these models of masculinity, in the way I view it, is men trying to manage their anxiety. And when I speak of managing anxiety, I'm speaking of when we try to get things outside of us to be different so we don't have to feel anxious on the inside. Now, during this workshop, I'm going to talk with you some and your listeners about soothing anxiety, whereas soothing anxiety is where you, from inside of you, you learn to calm your anxiety within so you can still lean into situations and move forward into situations that make you anxious. I mean, I'm sure you putting on this workshop, you had a lot of anxiety about it, but you soothed yourself and did it anyway. I had anxiety before this phone conversation this morning, but I've learned to soothe my anxiety and do it anyway. Now, managing anxiety, as I said, means trying to get everything outside of you to be different so you don't feel anxious anymore. Hmm. And the two typical ways that men have done that is either going to one extreme of being this maybe traditional, patriarchal, controlling, aggressive male that uses intimidation and dominance to try to get people or situations to be different so they don't have to feel anxious and they can go back to their life feeling calm and satisfying. Or the other extreme of that, kind of more the new age male, the more passive nice guy that I speak of and write about. And this guy, rather than being dominant and aggressive, he tries to manage his anxiety and get things to be different outside of him by pleasing and avoiding conflict and trying to solve problems. But it's not truly to solve a problem. It's just to get the problem that's bothering him to go away so it quits bothering him. Now, yeah. I propose a third model of masculinity, which I call the integrated male. And this is a man who's able to be conscious of his own inner anxieties, conscious of his own behaviors that tend to distract him and try that he uses to manage his anxiety. This is a man who's also what I call differentiated. You have David Snarch on your program. Mm-hmm. Amazing book, Passionate Marriage. He talks a lot about differentiation. That's the ability to identify what's important to you and what you want, and then hold on to that even when there's pressure to give that up to keep the peace or avoid conflict or to keep a relationship together. It also involves learning to soothe yourself from within. And then also learning to let go of attachment to outcomes, of trying to make things turn out a certain way. And I'm teaching men that as they move in this process of becoming more integrated, they do become more conscious and therefore more present with their partner in a relationship. They do become a more effective problem solver because they're not trying to get the problem to go away so their anxiety will go away. They learn to be better communicators. They learn to be more honest and transparent. That's a word I use a lot because I've listened to women for like almost 30 years, and one of the biggest complaints I hear is, I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what his plan is. I don't know what he wants. And in fact, when I sent in the proposal for this particular workshop, I sent a copy of it to a former girlfriend of mine who's still a friend of mine, And I said, just give me any feedback. And she sent it back. She said, I like it a lot, but add a part in there of women having to guess what their man is thinking and feeling.
Mm.
And she wanted to make sure that got added to the dynamic.
Yeah, and I imagine the guy's thinking, well, if I say what's really on my mind, she's won't like me, she won't want to be with me, she'll reject me, she won't have sex with me.
All of the above, and David, the things that we're going to be talking about are going to seem paradoxical to men. In fact, when men really experience this for the first time, it's kind of like, you know, their jaw drops and they're in bewilderment, that when they actually step up and tell their wife or girlfriend the truth, when they're actually transparent with what they're thinking and feeling inside rather than hiding it from her because it might upset her.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how women will typically respond to the truth, and even if it's a truth they don't like to hear, they'll respond with a sense of calm and you know, feeling connected to the man because they know what's happening. Because I've been listening again to women for 30 years, and they say, you know, I don't want him to please me. I don't want him to make me happy. I just want the truth. I just want to know what he's thinking. And so men are surprised when that method of being with a woman actually produces much better results than the results they've been getting by being avoidant, by avoiding conflict, by keeping things in that might upset their partner, by being less than completely honest. So as I said, it's a very radical model, so to speak, but it's a very common sense, natural model if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. How do I do this?
Well, if a man's sitting in my office or in one of my groups, I do 5 men's therapy groups a week in my private practice, so I'm talking with a lot of guys every week about this concept. And it begins with a term that probably we hear quite a bit nowadays, and maybe most of the people listening to your presentations, you know, we hear the term, we have our own idea of what it is, but it begins with consciousness. I've been married in the past for 25 years. I've been single now for about 6 years. And so I've seen interactions with women both from the inside of being in a long-term committed relationship and from just getting to know women, you know, in the process of dating them. But one of the things I tell a woman after I've dated a few times and it looks like we're going to keep seeing each other at least for a while is I tell her, here's what you can count on from me. I will be conscious. I will be honest and transparent. And I will set the tone and take the lead. In other words, I'll have a plan. I won't just constantly be saying, what do you want to do? What do you want? What do you want? I'll say, hey, let's go do this. And then we go from there. We can negotiate from there what we want to do. But beginning with that conscious part is being aware of what's going on inside of me. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What are my patterns of behavior to distract me from what I'm thinking and feeling or to keep the peace or avoid conflict? Or maintain what I call the possibility of availability, meaning I never upset my woman, so I'll be sure maybe she'll want to have sex later on. And we guys all know if a woman's upset about something, she's not going to want to have sex with us. So we always try to make sure she's never upset. So consciousness means being aware of those patterns. When I'm tempted to withhold some truth to not rock the boat, when I'm tempted to say what I think she wants to hear, when I'm tempted to keep something secret from her. The consciousness is I'm going to be aware of that, and not only to the best of my ability, tell her the whole truth or tell her what I really want, but perhaps even tell her that I was tempted to lie to her just then. And I've done that with women, too, and it's amazing how women respond to that information when I say, you know what, I owe you an apology because I was tempted to withhold some information from you because I felt anxious and I didn't want you to get upset at me, but here's the whole truth, and you needed to know that I was tempted to lie to you just a few minutes ago. And rather than women being upset, what, you were tempted to lie to me? They go, oh, well, thank you for telling me that. I really respect that you told me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that consciousness that lets your partner know what's really going on, what's really happening. And even if I'm feeling anxious, you know what I'm saying, if I'm anxious that she's going to be upset at me about something, it's even being conscious enough to say, you know what, I'm feeling anxious right now and somewhat avoidant, but I don't want to go into that place, but I just needed to tell you that's what's happening inside of me. So it begins with this kind of consciousness.
And I can imagine guys being scared to death to, you know, speak their truth to that level. And you're saying that women like that and will receive it positively. Are you sure about that?
Well, and in a minute we're going to talk more about non-attachment outcome, because whether or not they receive it positively is not the issue. We don't have a goal here that we want to resolve, you know, that we want to fix her having a problem of how she responds to it. I tell guys that integrity is its own reward. You acting with it consistently with your beliefs, with your deepest held core sense of what's right, that's its own reward whether people respond to it positively or not. And so that is our intention, is to act with integrity, not to say, oh, if I tell her the truth, then she'll be happy with that. Because the woman may not always like what you hear. But here's the thing, and I'm going to make what may sound like a fairly radical statement, and it still causes me a little bit of anxiety every time I say it. But here's what I tell men after 25 years of marriage and 30 years as a marriage and family therapist and last 6 years of dating, is I'll say the one thing that I claim to know for certain about women. Now, I'm making a generalization here, and I know that, but I'll make the statement knowing it's a generalization. And that is the one thing I know for certain about women is that they are security-seeking creatures. Now, I don't mean that at all in a negative way whatsoever, and I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I expect a bolt of feminist lightning to strike me down that says women don't need a man. You know, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. Gloria Steinem, who's made that comment, later married a very wealthy man and said, well, we kind of went to an extreme with some of these things. But I mean, that still echoes inside of me that, oh, no, you can't say things like that. But when I say that to women, 9 times out of 10, they nod their head. Yes, they want to feel safe. They want to feel secure. And the biggest issue they often feel in relationship is not being able to trust their partner. Not trust that they know what's going on inside, not trust that he'll tell them the truth. They can't trust them to stand up for them or stand up to them when necessary. So because the way that I believe women are partly biologically wired, because of the way the female brain is, and partly because of hormones, and partly because of socialization, they want to trust. They want to feel safe. That's how they deeply connect in relationship, whether it's with another woman or with a man. And I tell guys, as soon as you blow that trust with a woman, as soon as you tell her something that's less than the full truth, or you hold something back that makes you anxious, or you out and out lie to her, you've blown the trust, and now things are going downhill between you and her. Now, you can tell women some things that they don't like to hear, but the fact that they know you told them something that was difficult and you held to your truth, I've found in the majority of cases, it deepens the woman's love, trust, and connectedness with the man. And I mean, I've had so many men tell me stories. They'll go home from a group session or a workshop or a seminar that I've done. They're inspired. They go home. They take accountability. They tell their wife the truth about something they've been withholding, sometimes even something hugely significant like an infidelity or a pornography addiction. Or maybe they go home and set a boundary, or they bring up an issue that they've been avoiding for a long time. And initially, they'll come back to group the next week, or they'll send me an email and say, initially, she was devastated. She was upset. You know, we fought some. We cried. We talked all night long. And we've been having the most amazing sex every night for the last week.
Yeah.
And guys go, what just happened there? Well, they rebuilt the trust by coming home and being honest or setting a clear boundary or bringing something up that they'd been avoiding. And that trust allowed the woman to connect deeply with the man in ways that she couldn't connect because at an intuitive level, women know when they can't trust their man.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking about it that, you know, if you're trying to please, if you're not telling your whole truth, then your woman can't trust you.
And they can't. And I make a statement, and I'm going to kind of tone it down and give you the PG version of it for the workshop here. But I'll give you an example. I was doing a radio interview a few months ago with a local radio station here in the Seattle area. And it was two women who did this talk show, and I was in the studio with them. And it was the program was directed at women. And I was talking to them about my book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, and about some of the issues you and I are talking about right now. And during a break while we were doing the interview on the radio, I made a comment to these two women, both who were probably about my age, been in relationships long term, and I told them that I tell the men that I work with, if you mess with a woman's sense of trust, and I usually use a little bit stronger word there with men, if you mess with a woman's trust, she's not going to get wet. And the woman, both women sitting in the room go, "Oh, you've got to say that when we get back on the air." And I said, "I can say that on the radio?" And they said, "Yeah, there's no dirty words in that." And they said, "You've got to say that because men need to hear that and women need to know that too." And so we came back on and I talked about that. When you mess with a woman's sense of trust, they can't intimately and physically connect with you. And that's why so many men complain that their partners are uninterested in sex. Well, the trust has been destroyed, and the woman cannot open herself up to the man. Now, what's even more interesting, I ran into these two women in a coffee shop with actually a mutual friend that I didn't know. We all knew each other. I ran into them in a coffee shop about a month ago. They brought up that statement that I made, and one of them said, "You know what? I'm 50-something years old. I've been married for 20-something years, and I did not understand that until you said it to me during that interview, and now a lot more things make sense between me and my partner as to why I may not feel arousal and don't want to get close to him." And she goes, "I get it now. It's the trust issue."
Hmm. Related to that, you talked about the man should take the lead. Does a woman want that? Do they trust a man that takes the lead?
Here again, this is another concept that probably on its surface sounds maybe just a little bit radical, because when I speak with men about taking the lead, it's funny. Men have more of a problem with this concept than women do, which is interesting to me, because I'll talk to men about setting the tone and taking the lead, and when they echo that back to me, they always put the word control in it. Well, I'm supposed to take control then? Because that's just how the male brain, I guess, works. But as part of that dual paradigm I talked about in masculinity, it's either you're the controlling jerk or you're the passive nice guy. Okay? Those are the only two alternatives they see. And to think in terms of setting the tone and taking the lead from a place of love and integrity is a different paradigm that men have. We have to work quite a bit around this to help them understand what it means to set the tone and take the lead from a place of love. It's not being controlling. It's not being dominant. It's showing up. It's having a plan. Now, for example, as I said, I've been a single guy for a few years, and sometimes I'll take little polls of women just as a way of starting a conversation. One of the polls that I've taken of women is I say, okay, say you're going out on a first date with a guy, and you want to go out with this guy. He's stepped up. You guys are making arrangements for a date. I said, what do you prefer? For the man to just have a plan and say, hey, let's go do this on Friday night, or would you prefer for him to say to you, would you like to go out some night, and if so, what would you like to do? And the women universally go, I want the man to have a plan. Now, are the women saying, I want this man to control me and dominate me? No, they're not saying that, but the women get it. They're security-seeking creatures. They don't want the burden of having to figure it all out. Now, I'm not saying that they won't enter in and join in the process, but they want it to start with the man proposing a plan. Now, I'll also ask women, okay, say you're in effect, at one time I taught a class at a local community college, and we went out to a local restaurant to get a bite to eat afterwards, and I knew the waitress who came to take our order, and a young woman probably in her early 30s, and I said, Jessica, I want to ask you a question, and I asked this in front of the guys, about five or six guys who came after the class to have a bite to eat with us. And I said, Jessica, you're in a relationship. Your boyfriend is constantly saying, what do you want to do? What do you want to do tonight? What do you want for dinner? I said, how does that make you feel? And she just goes, it irritates me. And walks away. And I just smiled and looked at the guys and I said, she wants you to have a plan.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you can't be attached to it and want your way about things. So there's a difference between taking initiative, having a plan, and being controlling.
And the difference is the controlling man, as I said, is trying to manage his anxiety to get things to go the way he wants them to go, so that he won't feel anxious and he'll get his needs met.
Yeah.
The integrated male can set the tone and take the lead because he's already looked at the situation. You know, what's needed here? What would be fun? What would be enjoyable? What does my partner, what are her tastes? What are her interests? Where can I, you know, push her a little bit? Where can I lead her a little bit? Where can I do some things I know she'll find exciting? See, it involves you being conscious and present enough and thinking forward enough to come up with something. Now, this isn't just about where you're going to go on a date or, you know, what you're going to eat for dinner tonight. It's about being present in all ways and to be thinking about the relationship and thinking about the needs of your partner and thinking about your own needs and making them a priority as well and thinking about the future. I'm not talking about dwelling in the future, but to be present and conscious of what's going on here.
Yeah, and I imagine that, you know, women hunger for that.
They do, and when I talk about the things I'm talking with you about and your listeners right now, women will nod their heads, and they're just, yeah. And I've had so many women say, where can I meet a guy like this you're talking about? They'll say, you need to start a website and have the profiles of all the guys you've worked with. Or I've had women say, can I come stand in your parking lot and talk to these guys when they come out of your office? Because women are looking for a guy who will be conscious, who will be present, who will tell the truth, who will be transparent, and who will set the tone and take the lead with love. Because women, as I said, they get this stuff. They get it intuitively, but they can't force the man into it and get him to be this way, because once the woman starts pushing for this to happen, we're back in the same old paradigm. She's trying to address an issue, i.e. she wants her man to be more of a leader, but maybe she doesn't even know it consciously. And the guy's just thinking, oh, she's telling me I'm doing it wrong again. You know, what do I have to do to get her off my back? And then he'll, you know, maybe do what he thinks it ever takes to please her in that moment so she'll quit being upset at him about whatever she's upset about, because it's always the same old thing, and then they do the same old dance.
Yeah. You know, Robert, I want to ask you about managing anxiety. And I get that this is a key concept in your paradigm, because it's what drives men. Because when men want to please, they're trying to manage their anxiety. When men are trying to control, they're trying to manage their anxiety. Now, do you get guys to say, I'm not feeling anxious?
Well, yeah. You know, the more I work with people and the more I keep looking at my own self and the way I am in the world. In fact, I just made this statement to a group of guys last night. I said, you know what? I think pretty much every problem that people have and every problem the world has comes down to people trying to manage their anxiety.
Yeah, please explain that.
Because, you know, if you think about it, well, and the reason I thought about, I shared this with this group yesterday, is that the diet that I'm on, the way that I eat, you undereat during part of the day and then you overeat in a healthy way in the evening time. It's a great diet. I love it. I'm energized. It's called the Warrior Diet, if anybody wants to go check it out. I love it. But I'm not trying to plug that. The point was, I noticed yesterday afternoon, because I'd just eaten a few pieces of fruit during the day, that I was feeling kind of, I was hungry, and which is okay. I was aware that I was hungry, but I also noticed I felt a certain state of anxiety with the hunger. And it dawned on me, well, that makes sense, that the human mind, the brain would send you signals that, hey, pay attention to this situation. You know, you're hungry. Your survival depends on you eating. And anxiety is that signal it sent me to get my attention. Now, what most of us have learned, because most of us do not like anxiety, we don't like to feel anxious, that uneasy, buzzy feeling inside, most of us have thermostats inside our brain that automatically click in if the anxiety level even gets to the mildly noticeable stage, and then we all go into our predictable ways of managing anxiety. For me, food is one of them. I'll eat to soothe myself, or to calm myself down and manage my anxiety. Now, I don't consciously think I'm anxious. I think I'll go pig out on a bowl of Ben and Jerry's, but I can do that so unconsciously without even being aware. And that's where consciousness is so important. If I know that you know, thinking of eating the whole carton of Ben and Jerry's is a really good idea at 10 o'clock at night, I become conscious enough to know, huh, I wonder what's going on. You know, what am I anxious about? What am I trying to manage here? So I don't care if it's turning to alcohol, food, relationship, pornography, surfing the internet, watching TV endlessly, or even compulsive exercise or gambling or money making or working. These are typically all ways of trying to manage our anxiety. As soon as we feel a little bit anxious, the thermostat kicks in inside our head, and without even thinking about it, we go into these behaviors to make ourselves feel better. In fact, even that paradigm where I'm talking about, where often the woman is approaching the man to get his attention and get him to address something and pay attention, and many times she's also just trying to manage her anxiety as well. She's maybe feeling an emotional disconnect, or she's feeling alone or isolated, or she's feeling overwhelmed by something. And then she'll often go into her unconscious anxiety management technique. And for some women, that's withdrawing. For other women, it's becoming emotionally hostile. For some women, it's wanting to talk something to death. There's lots of different ways of managing anxiety, and mostly we tend to be unconscious of them. And the thing is, they never permanently make our anxiety go away. I mean, as long as we're alive and kicking and doing things, you know, in life, especially getting out of our comfort zone in any way, we're going to experience anxiety. So it's that consciousness of what you do when you're anxious that can be so helpful in helping you become more aware and maybe choose to act differently or choose to soothe yourself, as I've said, is, I think, the healthier alternative, which lets you act with more integrity.
And if the word anxiety doesn't work for you, discomfort.
How are you defining comfort?
Oh, comfort is what feels okay and comfortable, and discomfort is, you know, uncomfortable and want to need to do something about it to feel comfortable.
Okay. And this whole concept of comfort, that's another little bit of subject that I talk a lot with men about. I think men are happiest when they're pursuing challenge rather than comfort, because I find that when men pursue comfort, we get into what I call the junk food mode. We just will keep wanting the things that make us comfortable in the moment, and we avoid challenge more and more. But I think men are happiest when they're leaning into challenge, when they're doing the things that are outside their comfort zone, when they're pushing their edge a little bit. That makes us happiest. So in order to do that, we have to learn to soothe our anxiety. So self-soothing is basically where we work on the inside of us to calm ourselves down enough so that we can move forward into situations that make us anxious. So, like, for example, before our phone conversation that we're having right now, I felt some degree of anxiety, not a lot, because I've done enough of these kind of things, and I know they go well, but I felt some anxiety. I felt myself being a little rigid, just a little bit uptight, a little physically, felt my back kind of getting a little tight, and I felt the things I feel when I'm anxious. And so the things that I teach men and women to do, and I've learned to do myself in these situations, first is breathe. The best self-soothing technique there is to breathe, because when we're stressed or anxious, we tend to hunch over, we tighten up, our shoulders go up by our ears, and we quit breathing. In fact, a lot of people hold their breath when they're anxious, or at most we breathe these rapid, shallow little breaths, and we don't get enough oxygen into our system, the CO2 levels get out of whack, and that then activates a greater anxiety response in our brain. So taking a breath, what's called diaphragmatic breathing, where we kind of breathe up from our belly, open our shoulders up, that alone physiologically calms us down by getting more oxygen into our blood, but it also shifts our brain somewhat. It gets us out of that tightened, restricted place. Opens you up. Beck, I'm doing it as we talk. So this form of breathing opens you up and soothes you, and then that's often sufficient enough to lean into something that's making you anxious, whether it's doing an interview over the phone, whether it's telling your wife or girlfriend that you're feeling angry at her right this minute, or whether it's telling the truth about something you've been withholding, or whether it's confronting your boss about how he gave you a double standard and you're confused. Take the breath. Now, a second thing that I find amazingly helpful is something I learned from Susan Jeffers in her book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. She says all fear is based on a deep unconscious belief that I can't handle it. If I look foolish, I can't handle it. If she gets mad at me, I can't handle it. If I lose my job, I can't handle it. And she says the way to shift that is to shift what we're playing in our head. And so, you know, when I'm thinking about doing this interview with you, I said, I can handle this. You know, I've done six-hour seminars with no notes. I can handle this. You and I have interviewed before. It went wonderfully. You liked the how it came out. I can handle it. So I tell myself I can handle it, and then also remind myself of positive outcomes from other situations similar to this and how I did handle it in the past. And then I tell myself, no matter how it turns out, it'll be okay. It'll be all right. In fact, had a little bit of a glitch in trying to get online with you. I realized this morning that it wasn't an 800 number. I went out and went to the store. I had to go to two different stores to get a calling card. I come home. I call in to do the interview. My calling card doesn't work, so I call you on my cell phone, and then I find out there's a local number I could call, and so it all worked out. But, you know, a little bit of stress, but in the midst of that little bit of turmoil before you and I even spoke, I kept breathing. I told myself, you know what, this is going to work out one way or another, and then just kept moving forward, and some elegant solutions arose from that.
Hmm. Okay, so we're talking about self-soothing, and breathing is a big part, and addressing what's going on in your head. I love the point of view of fear being, you know, really the fear that you're not going to be able to handle it, so reassuring yourself that you can handle it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and anything else about self-soothing?
Well, I'd say let's just start with that, because I think if people can do those three things, to remind themselves to breathe, tell themselves that no matter what happens, they'll handle it, and then remind themselves of other similar situations in which they did indeed handle it, and things turned out okay, that they were all right. Because I tell people, you know what, of everything you've ever been anxious for in your entire life, you've handled everything, because you're alive and ticking, you survived it, you've handled everything you've ever felt anxious about.
Yeah.
And people often go, oh, well,
yeah,
I guess that's true. And so whatever I'm feeling anxious about right now, in a few days, it will have come and passed. It'll be done. So we've handled everything else that's come up. We'll handle whatever's making us anxious now. So kind of taking it back to the man, you know, playing this healthy leadership role in his relationship, whether this is the man telling his wife something he thinks she might not want to hear, or speaking the truth, or you know, he knows that she's upset about something, but it hasn't gotten resolved. So he shows back up and might even say, you know what, I don't know the answer to this. I'm not even sure I really understand what's bothering you, but I'm willing to show up and be present, and let's figure this out. And if we can't get through this together, let's go find somebody that will help us get through this. Okay? Boy, that's going to take a little bit of self-soothing for the guy to step up and do that, because, as I said, for most of us men, we tend to read the woman, and if she doesn't seem to be upset about something right this moment, we assume everything's okay, don't rock the boat, don't do anything that might change that status quo. And if she is upset about something right now, we think, oh, how can I get her over being upset so we can get everything back to smooth again? And so it takes a lot of self-soothing to step up and do something that maybe doesn't come inherently or naturally easy for most men.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the man with the male brain, his brain's a problem-solving machine. And typically, he's just always thinking, how can I solve this problem to move on and not have this problem out there anymore?
Yeah, let me ask you about that. Let's take two scenarios. And here's a guy who is with a woman, and the woman's having a bad day. And one scenario, the woman's having a bad day for an external reason, like at work.
Okay.
And he wants to fix it and make it okay, and that's his impulse. And the other scenario is she's having a bad day because of him. What's a guy to do?
What's a guy to do? Now, men ask me this question daily. Okay. I hear this every day. All right. You know, she seemed upset about something. What do I do? You know, because, again, they see her and her upsetness as a problem to be solved. And I tell men, whenever you approach your partner as a problem to be solved, you're killing the intimacy in the relationship. Your partner, even if she is being a screaming banshee, she's not a problem to be solved, right? That there's something happening here that you need to be present with. And this is where it comes in, and I've invented a word, and I love using it as often as I can, mainly because I like the sound of it, and because to me it speaks so well to what I'm talking with men about. And that is, as a man, if you're conscious, if you're soothing yourself, and if you're differentiated, i.e., you're holding on to yourself and you're not giving up you to try to, you know, keep the peace or keep your partner happy, and if you're not attached to the outcome, you can be what I call a good ascertainer. Now, an ascertainer is somebody who's present enough, calm enough, and loving enough with their partner to ask themselves, what is needed here? So say, for example, to answer your question, woman comes home from work or comes in the house from the store, whatever, she's upset. The man can tell by all her signals and cues, he's upset. Okay? Now, the typical man that I work with immediately goes into problem-solving mode. Oh, what's wrong? Can I just avoid her? If she starts talking, how long do I have to listen to her? How long is it going to take me to fix this so I can go back to watching SportsCenter or surfing the Internet? You know, and so that's the typical non-ascertaining thing. Just, you know, an example, a friend of mine is a retired firefighter. And he's a young guy. He retired on disability. But he used to complain about all the older veteran firefighters because he said they had one response to every situation. And he said that one response was always put the wet stuff on the red stuff. So every time they walk into a situation where there's fire, flame, smoke, spray water on it. And this friend of mine said that's not what's always needed. You've got to ascertain. Does it need fire or does it need water on the fire? Do we need to put chemicals on it? Do we need to let it burn out? Do we need to create a containment of some sort? Do we rush in? Do we wait? He said, you've got to ascertain. So what happens with most men is if their woman is upset about something, they immediately try to just put the wet stuff on the red stuff. You know, they want to put that fire out, get it solved, go back to doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah, well, when you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. But a good ascertainer. Wife comes in, she's upset, and I'll kind of walk guys through this, and I'll say, if you're actually present, and you're not trying to solve the problem, and you're not trying to manage your anxiety, you're going to be able to ascertain probably what your wife, your girlfriend, most needs. And I said, and there's not a one answer fit alls, and sometimes you're going to have to put down what you're doing and spend some time. Whatever's going on inside of her is really deep, is meaningful, is significant to her, and she needs your presence. She doesn't need you to fix it. She just needs you there because she needs you to know what she's experiencing. Sometimes that's what's needed. Sometimes she is just looking for a quick answer. Hey, can you tell me how to, you know, get my parking brake off? It's stuck, and it's been stuck all the way home. All right, maybe she does need you to solve a problem. In another situation, maybe she just, you know, had an encounter with a rude checkout person, and that's on her mind, and maybe the guy just needs to say, hey, just give me the guy version. You know, in other words, give me the two-sentence version of what's bothering you. And maybe that's the totally appropriate response. The woman gives him the guy version, and or maybe the other response is for the guy to say, you know what, you need to go call a girlfriend. Now, that's not being dismissive, it's ascertaining. Maybe in that situation, this is purely a thing she needs to talk to another woman about, and it's not anything that he's even interested in, needs to know about, or is even relevant. So, but he's got to ascertain what that situation is calling for. I was talking to a young man this morning in the coffee shop where I go every morning before I came up to do the interview, I was telling him about this interview that I was going to do, and he's like 25 years old. And I talked to him about being an ascertainer. And I said, do you like the James Bond movie Casino Royale? And he goes, oh, yeah, I just watched that with a bunch of young men I work with just about a month ago. I said, do you remember that scene where he comes back and the woman in the movie is in the shower? And for those of your listeners who've seen the movie, it's a powerful scene. Because I'm not recommending James Bond as the epitome of how to be an integrated male, but this scene is great. Because prior to this scene, there had been a big fight in the stairway that he and this woman were battling off these two bad guys. And Bond ends up killing the two bad guys. And the woman is visibly shaken by this violent encounter. And then so the next scene is he goes back and goes back to playing this card game at Casino Royale. But then that scene quickly is over, and he comes back to their room, and the woman hasn't been in this most recent scene. And he sees a broken wine glass in the room, and he pushes the door to the bathroom open. It's a big, elegant hotel room. And she's sitting in this glass shower with her evening gown on, sitting on the floor, water running down on her head, arms crossed, shaking and shivering because of this trauma that she just went through of being in this violent fight where two men got killed. All right, Bond has already taken off his dinner jacket. He still has on his tuxedo shirt, his bow tie. Now, the typical guy I work with would go, why the hell are you sitting in the shower? They'd go, oh, here's a problem to be solved. They'd try to talk her out of the shower. Why are you in the shower with your clothes on? You know, why are you? And he just walks in without a word. Sits down next to her in the shower with his shirt, and he undoes his bow tie, undoes his top button of his shirt. He's getting soaking wet right along with her. He kind of puts his arm there, and she says, I feel like I can't get the blood off my fingers. And then he kind of licks her fingers in a very kind of, you know, kind of taking care of her way. And then he goes, you cold? And she goes, yeah. And he reaches up and warms the water up and puts his arms around her. Now, he hardly said a word to her. And she wasn't a problem to be solved, but he ascertained she just needed his presence and his strength and him being there with her in this time of extreme emotional distress. And it's a beautiful scene when you look at it in terms of here's a man powerfully ascertaining a situation and then responding in the most appropriate way possible. Mm. Anyway, I love that scene. I tell guys, go watch that.
Yeah, it's a great metaphor and example. So being an ascertainer means that you put a little intelligence and into your problem solving and figure out, how you can help without being a controller, without managing your own anxiety, without fixing it.
And it doesn't even always involve helping or solving a problem, but it does require you to pay attention. And this presence that I talk with men about is so crucial, because men get so easily distracted by so many things. And if our partner is speaking with us, so often we just want them to be done with it. But presence doesn't mean you have to sit and listen to them for hours at a time. In fact, that may not be present at all. You may just be kind of, pretending. The presence means you bring all of your energy, all of your focus. You're there with her. And it's not an analytical process of going, oh, what do I need to do to fix this? It's just being present. And if we're not anxious, if we're soothing our anxiety, if we're not attached to, we have to have things come out a certain way, the elegance of our presence is so amazing. And women experience that. And they crave for it. And they long for it. And when I describe this to women, they nod their head because they know what that's like. But then they kind of shake their head and their body language shows, man, where can I find a man like that? Most men don't get that.
Hmm. Coincidentally, we have a question from one of our participants who obviously is female, and she's dating a man. She's 3 dates now, who is a pleaser and always asks her, what she wants to do, and she really wants him to take the initiative and make a decision and come up with a plan. And he's not getting it. He's not responding.
So here's a paradox that, I hate to say this, but I don't have the perfect answer, because here's the paradox.
Mm-hmm.
If she tries to help him get it, she's actually still driving the bus, so to speak. She's doing what actually, of course, she naturally is inclined to do, to want him to show up and be present, but trying to push a man to get him to show up and be present often just exacerbates what he's already doing, i.e. being avoidant, because he's going, oh, I must have done that wrong. What do I need to do different to do it right so she won't be pushing me to do this anymore?
Yeah.
Now, so all I know to tell her is to calmly sit down with him and tell her what she likes about him. I like this about you, and I like that about you. And here's one thing that would make me feel really secure as a woman, and that is for you not to try to figure out how to please me, but for you to figure out how to please you, and then tell me what that is, and then I can decide if that works for me or not. But invite me to come, to come be a part of what's important to you. And the example that I give to men, I started taking salsa lessons 3 or 4 years ago for a number of reasons. I thought it looked cool. I had this belief that I couldn't dance and I had no rhythm. But the amazing thing that I learned from it was I learned how to lead and how important it is to lead and how important it is on the dance floor to communicate to my partner where we're going next and what's going to happen next. And I have to be thinking ahead. And I remember one salsa teacher I had who would stop in the middle of class and he'd basically say to the men what I say to them in my group therapy. He said, men, think ahead. Know what your next move is. Don't wait till that move's done and then think, what are you going to do next? Because you'll just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And he goes, and women will get bored with you. And I go, amen. So she can maybe use that analogy. She says, I need you to be like my lead on the dance floor. I want to follow where you lead, but you have to lead. And I tell men, a woman can't follow where a man doesn't lead. And again, I need to reiterate, I'm not talking about being controlling, dominating. I'm talking about being like that man on the dance floor that in the way that he leads, he knows it's going to make his partner feel good and look good because he led. He had presence enough to lead. And then the one other suggestion I give to women is either I have suggest that their guy either go look at my website, nomoremrniceguy.com, or I've had plenty of men, you know, email me, sign up for groups, sign up for my seminars because they said either a wife or a girlfriend or even an ex-wife or girlfriend gave them my book. And then they were able to get it because they read it in the book, and it wasn't so much the woman trying to coach them on how to be a more assertive male.
Mm. Yeah, right. Yeah, men do tend to get it best from other men. So you're performing a valuable public service.
Well, and thank you, and I will concur that that is true, that we men tend to learn well from other men, because I'll go back to that piece that as a typical guy is always, if he's with a woman that he cares about and wants a sexual connection with, typically, as I said, he's trying to maintain that possibility of her availability. So if she's trying to get him to address something, all he's thinking of is, I got to fix that, get her back to being in a good mood so she'll want to have sex later on. And I'm overstating it a little bit to make the point. But that does tend to be what's happening with guys. So, yeah, even if a woman's saying, hey, I need you to show up and be present in this way or set the tone or for you to have a plan, he may still just hear that he's doing it wrong and she's telling him he should be different. So, like I said, it's a challenging paradox, but I wish her luck. And you know, just sit down and just say, here's what I really like in a man, and I'd like for you to have a plan.
Mm-hmm. You know, in your description, you talk about how this program is, you know, for men and women, gay and straight, single and married. Can we talk about, you know, gay versus straight? What do you notice are the differences in gay relationships about this?
You know what? It seems like, you know, I'm straight. Majority of people I work with are straight. But typically, when I do seminars around the country, I'd say, you know, maybe 10% of the guys, 10 to 15% of the guys that come are in gay relationships. And I'll often ask up front how many men are in gay relationships, you know, not to out them anyway, but just so I understand who my audience is and understand, you know, who I need to be speaking to. And what I often tell, the gay men is that, you know what, I'm going to speak in terms of gender, but just substitute, you know, whatever terms work for you in your intimate relationship. And you know, people, whether gay or lesbian, they've learned to do that anyway. That's just the society they live in, okay? They've learned to do it. But what's funny is that after my workshops, the gay men will tell me, everything you talked about, we've experienced, right? It seems like in every intimate relationship, there does seem to be a natural inclination for one to take more of a masculine role and one to take more of what we'd consider a traditional feminine role, both in terms of emotion and thinking and how the relationship is driven. So this isn't so much a thing to say, okay, this is the man's job to do this. But it does mean in a relationship that there's a working out of what those roles are. And if the person playing perhaps the more masculine role goes into just that problem-solving, avoidant, we got to get this thing back to normal mode. And it is interesting that even in gay and lesbian relationships, again, there does seem to be those kind of, you know, dichotomies. These couples got to, you know, take the principles but work them out according to their unique situation.
Yeah. You know, you have a testimonial that just came in. Michelle from Los Angeles is saying, Dr. Glover, I'm recently remarried after being a widow. My new husband attended your workshops a few years before I met him and really took your teachings to heart. He has integrated your information into his life. He does take the lead, and it is wonderful. It was what attracted me to him in the first place. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for writing that, Michelle. I do believe that this is making the world a better place, and that's not coming from an arrogant state of mind, but I do hear that kind of feedback, because again, it seems like kind of a radical message on one hand, but yet it is such a common sense message.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's it's a strong testimonial for all women that they do want the man to take the lead.
But let me head to that just a little bit, because I hate to use the term, for example, all women or all men, because, as again, I acknowledge I'm speaking in generalities, and I acknowledge that generalities have limitations. They don't fit every situation. And I do try to make, you know, grossly overstating or misrepresenting or putting anybody into a pigeonhole to say, well, because you're a woman, you're this way. That's all the way. I try to avoid that. So I try to avoid using all men, all women, of speaking in the generalities. But what I have found in general is that women don't want to feel like the most powerful person in the room. They don't want to have to make all the decisions. They don't want that burden put on them. But I've also found in general they don't want to be controlled or dominated.
Yeah.
And which of course that then seems confusing to men and women, and that's why I talk about that third position of being, for men, being integrated male. And one of the things I've found, besides the trust, the greater intimacy, the actual resolving problems better, greater sexual connection, but one of the things I've found when men are more conscious and applying this model that I'm talking about is there's actually greater reciprocity in the relationship. There's a greater give and take where the partners are actually taking turns leading and setting the tone in very healthy reciprocal ways. But here's what I found. And again, I'm going to make a generalization, but I've worked with nice guys for many years now. And I found that if the man is a passively pleasing guy, been trained all of his life to try to figure out how to make the woman happy, and usually we guys have no clue of what that is, but we just keep trying anyway. So, say for example, it begins like with the one gal who wrote in, a third date. And the guy's trying to impress the woman, trying to please her, trying to get the woman to like him, which is, I tell guys, that's the worst possible reason to date, try to get women to like you.
Mm-hmm.
I tell men that the goal of dating is to find out what's her nature, and you have to set the tone and take the lead to find out what her nature is. So let's say, for example, on about the third date, the guy's already gotten into this passive mode, and he's kind of saying, well, what would you like to do tonight? Would you like to go get dinner, or where would you like to go eat? And so from the beginning, let's say the woman realizes the man's not going to have a plan. He's not going to set the tone. Well, the woman, if she's a security-seeking creature, doesn't want to just leave it hanging, so she's learned, well, okay, I'll step up and take charge. And unfortunately, in many cases, that's stepping up and taking control. Now, here's what I found. If the woman from the very beginning, and again, I'm making generalizations, so please, I understand this doesn't apply to every situation or every context, but if from the very beginning of the relationship, if the woman senses the man will not set the tone, or doesn't have a plan, or she can't count on him to make a decision, she will. So basically, a metaphor I use, she'll get into the driver's seat because he won't. So she'll get into the driver's seat, and the guy climbs into the passenger seat. Now, the guy over in the passenger seat thinks, well, I guess she wants to drive. I won't challenge that. I guess I'll just always let her drive and let her do it the way she wants to do it because she seems to want that. Well, it may not be that she wants that at all. She may just realize if he's not going to get in the driver's seat and drive, if this is going to go anywhere, somebody has to, I will. So she's sitting over in the driver's seat thinking, I can't trust this guy to drive. You know, he doesn't volunteer. He won't say, hey, let me drive for a while. So she just keeps on driving because she doesn't trust that he'll ever, you know, come over and take the wheel. And he's sitting over there thinking, well, I guess she likes to drive. I won't challenge that. And so nothing ever changes. There's no reciprocity. There's no back and forth. But what I'm saying that if the man will set the tone and take the lead, get behind the wheel, and after a little bit she says, do you want me to drive for a little while? He can say, yeah, sure, come on over. And she knows that she can count on that she doesn't have to do that forever because he'll say, okay, I'll drive now, and he'll get back there. And he's not trying to please her, so he can let her take the wheel. And it's a beautiful reciprocity. There's a give and take, and it really plays out beautifully in the sexual realm. That if the man will set the tone and take the lead, and the woman opens up and trusts that and lets go, and then she can kind of say, okay, and she can flip him over, and she can climb on top for a while, and she can kind of take a dominant position, and he can let go and enjoy that because she knows that he's going to, you know, flip her back down, and they're going to do, and it's this flow and a give and a take and a reciprocity that doesn't seem to happen when the man won't set the tone. If the man just leaves it all up to the woman, that kind of joyous reciprocity doesn't seem to ever occur.
Yeah. So, guys, you got to step up. You have to tell your truth. You have to have a plan, take initiative with that plan. You have to ascertain.
I'll just add the one thing. If you set the tone with a plan, if you say, hey, let's go get Chinese tonight, and if she says, well, I really wanted to stay home, could we order out, or can we go get Italian? It doesn't mean that he's got to say, okay, no, we got to get Chinese because that's the plan. If he says, it's a starting point. Let's go get Chinese. And she says, great. Well, you go get Chinese. Or if she says, well, can we do Italian tonight? He can ask himself, how's Italian sound? Sounds okay to me. Yeah, sure. Let's go. Let's go get the Italian. I know a great Italian place, right? So it's not that he's going to make a plan and we got to stick to it. It's just a starting point.
Right. Yeah, I think of it as taking initiative. So, you know, you don't have to be attached to it. Yeah. Very, very cool. So if you have a question for Dr. Glover, go ahead and put it in the question box. And, wow, what else, Robert? What haven't we covered that we need to cover today? As far as I can tell, it's pretty complete, but I'm feeling like there's more that you can share with us.
Well, we haven't talked a lot about attachment to outcome. And, man, that's like, you know, a week-long workshop in itself.
Yeah, that's the key to having a plan but not being dominating about it.
And this non-attachment is not only, I think, an integral part to being an integrated male and being an integrated woman. I think it's really the key to enjoying life, because I think really it's attachment to outcome that causes all anxiety. If you think about it, and I think for most people, especially when the men I work with, the two things that men get most attached, well, actually there's a few things. One is that if you need everybody's approval, you're going to be anxious all the time because you're never going to have everybody's approval.
Right.
Or if you believe you have to do everything right and never make a mistake, which many guys do believe that. I think it's part of the functioning of the male brain to try to get everything right. That perfectionism will make you anxious. But if you think about it, if you weren't attached to needing anybody to like you, if you weren't attached to having to do anything perfectly, what would you be anxious about? Other than maybe, you know, a Greyhound bus bearing down on you at, you know, 50 miles an hour. That would be legitimate anxiety. But most of the anxiety we have comes from our attachments to wanting people to like us. If we're in a relationship, it's from wanting your partner's approval or not wanting them to ever reject you or ever to leave you or ever to think you're a terrible person or ever get mad at you. What if we had none of those attachments in a relationship? What if you were lovingly detached from needing your partner's approval, validation, sexual presence, and what if you're willing to just accept what is, ask for what you want, you know, take accountability for what you want, but let go of attachment that you've got to make that happen or that your partner has to be a certain way for you to be okay. Man, if we can let go of those attachments, then there's no reason to control anybody. Then you can just ask for what you want or say what you want. Then you can tell your truth, or you can let your partner be upset about something without trying to fix it because you're not attached. But I tell you what, you know, Buddha said that attachment's the cause of all suffering, and I believe that's true. I think this is probably the human journey in a nutshell, is learning to live with non-attachment. But it's crucial for integration, because as soon as you get caught up in trying to either do it right or get approval, you're going to lose your integrity. And this is such a core piece with the men I work with, and that's why I talk about being an integrated male, is that integrity means asking yourself what feels right to you and then doing it. And if you're attached to the outcome of you, you're either never going to ask yourself what feels right to you, or if you do ask yourself that question, you won't do it because you're afraid it might upset somebody, or they might leave you, or they might get angry, or they'll never talk to you again, or they'll think you're a bad person. So this non-attachment is hugely crucial in order to act with integrity and love in relationship.
Yeah, and, you know, what strikes me is that that's the key to the managing anxiety piece, and anxiety is always about something that's not real. And we're always going to have anxiety, we're always going to have fear, and managing it means focusing on not being attached.
Well, and as I said, I try to use very specific terms. I mean, the managing anxiety is when we are attached because we're trying to get something outside of us to be different because we're attached and not wanting to feel anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Soothing anxiety is where we accept that anxiety is a part of being alive, mm-hmm. and we soothe it and move forward anyway.
Okay, very good. Soothing anxiety.
Yeah, and I try to be very specific about those terms and define those terms so that when we communicate, we kind of can be on the same wavelength. But those are my definitions for what they're worth.
Yeah, okay, got it. We have a question that came in about a physically normal man that avoids sex.
Is this coming from the partner?
I don't know. It's not signed. And, I don't know if this is a man writing or a woman writing. It says, what about a physically normal man? And yes, women can tell you that such men exist in greater numbers than it typically acknowledged, who avoids sex with a normal woman.
Okay, that was a huge question, but believe it or not, it's a question I've heard and more than once. And I'll just throw out a few generalities without knowing the specifics to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a number of factors. Either it is a huge anxiety issue that the man has performance anxieties, which a lot of men I talk with do. There's a lot of pressure nowadays around men being studs sexually, right? Satisfying their woman, which brings up a lot of anxiety, and anxiety and sexual performance don't go well together. In fact, using the word sex and performance in the same sentence is not a good idea, because sex is not a performance. It's a matter of being present with somebody.
Yeah.
So it could be that the man has extreme performance anxieties, and so therefore he avoids sex because it makes him feel too anxious, because he's afraid he'll either ejaculate too quickly or not be able to come at all or can't keep his erection or get the erection. So maybe he's avoiding because of that. It could be that he has sexual trauma in his background, and being sexual brings up a lot of emotional trauma for him, and so he avoids it to avoid that. It could be he's got a lot of sexual shame, and something about the context is that it brings up too much shame, so he avoids that. He may not be physically attracted to his partner, but oftentimes men won't come out and be clear and direct about that, so it could be a lack of physical attraction, and that's typically important for most men. It could be that he's having an affair on the side, and he's emotionally killing off his partner and avoiding being sexual with his partner because he's got all of his sexuality invested somewhere else. And by the way, part of my definition of integrity and an integrated male and being present is that you bring all of your sexual energy to your partner.
Mm.
It could be that he developed a pornography and masturbation addiction as an adolescent. And I've worked with many, many men who, when they first started being sexual, turned to pornography, which is, you know, fairly normal and typical. And they get really addicted to it, and like an alcoholic's addicted to alcohol, not just a casual every now and then, but really daily, maybe several times a day or hours at a day, looking at pornography and masturbating. And what most men think is, oh, when I get into a relationship and I'm having real sex, this will go away. Well, often it doesn't. It just goes underground, and I call it safe sex. It's safe in that you don't have to deal with a real live person, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can just stay in your fantasy world and your porn world and your masturbation world. And I've worked with a lot of men in a relationship whose partners want to have sex, and they can't figure out why the guy doesn't, and it's because he's addicted and finds more comfort in having his secret porn stash than he does in his partner.
Yeah,
so there's several possibilities.
A lot of them fall into the category of managing anxiety.
It is, and I tell you what, going into a trance, looking at porn on the internet for hours at a time, is a great anxiety management tool. And anytime you're in a trance with anything, you're not feeling. And that's why a lot of men look at porn excessively. In fact, I think a lot of men that look at porn in secret are not necessarily even sex addicts, so many of them are not having sex. I think most of them are shame addicts, in that they can go into that little shame trance that they're doing something that feels bad but feels good. There's a fear of getting caught, fear of being found out. And actually, that state creates a very powerful trance for them. But, man, that's a whole other workshop in itself.
Yeah, it is. And we are at the end of our time. And it's just flown, Robert. This has been a great program. Thank you very much.
David, thank you. It does always go by quickly, and I appreciate you putting this program on and giving me the opportunity to speak. And it's been a great joy to spread the word of what I'm trying to do with for men and women out there in the world.
Absolutely. Robert, thank you very, very much. This has been an outstanding program. Okay, bye for now.